Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only.
Welcome to Coffee with Closers, a podcast produced by Pinkston, a strategic communications firm headquartered just outside Washington, D.C. We talk with some of America's most influential closers, from industry-leading CEOs to best-selling authors, professional athletes, entrepreneurs, and everyone in between. So grab a cup of coffee and sit back as we take you on an informative, thought-provoking, and highly entertaining journey into the lives of highly successful, driven, and forward-thinking disruptors who are making a lasting impact in their field and on society. On this week's episode of Coffee with Closers, we continue our conversation with Steve Del Bianco, the president and CEO of NetChoice, a trade association representing some of the largest e-commerce and technology companies in the world, including Amazon, Google, Meta, and eBay. He discusses a major antitrust lawsuit the Federal Trade Commission has brought against Amazon. He explains why NetChoice thinks it is ill-conceived on many levels and the adverse consequences that await consumers and small business owners if the FTC gets its way in court. All right, I want to move on to another proverbial elephant in the room. talking about antitrust here. So the Federal Trade Commission and 17 state attorneys general have sued Amazon. They allege that Amazon is a monopoly that, quote unquote, uses a set of interlocking, anti-competitive, and unfair strategies to illegally maintain its monopoly power, and that the company's actions allow it to stop rivals and sellers from lowering prices, degrade quality for shoppers, overcharge sellers, and the like. I know NetChoice is sort of battling this on a couple of fronts. Just at a high level, do you want to just tell our viewers where is Amazon taking heat incoming on a legal standpoint?
Yeah, Lina Khan is the chair of the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC.
Yep.
And hasn't spent any time in the private sector, but while a law student or professor at Columbia, she wrote a paper that showed her view that Amazon had become such an innovator that they had driven prices down to be too low, prices to be too low, not too high, and that their marketplace itself shouldn't be one where both Amazon and marketplace sellers compete to give you and I the best choices and the best value.
Sure.
So that paper, I guess it would have been a good idea to read that paper before the government decides to hire her, or perhaps our government decided they really wanted to take a 2x4 and whack some of America's most successful tech companies in the head. Mm-hmm. And that's precisely what we have. The antitrust laws in this country were designed to pressure companies into competing, to pressure them to innovate and compete, to pressure a company like Amazon to take on a giant like Walmart, which is exactly what Amazon did. And when Amazon discovered that they'd built a superb marketplace, they opened it up to third-party sellers, small businesses we buy from every day that are allowed to list their items on Amazon. And fully half of Amazon's transactions today are not sold by Amazon, but rather sold by a third party seller or manufacturer that is on the platform. Amazon also offers generic items. The same thing we'll see if we walk into a grocery store where they have the store brand. Well, those are all good for you and I. We have choices between things that are sold and made by Amazon, things that are sold and made by third-party sellers, and generics that are at a lower price because they're not a name brand. That's all good for consumers and drives prices down. So the antitrust laws really don't have a place in this game. The antitrust laws are about protecting consumers. It's called the Consumer Welfare Standard.
Gotcha.
And when the FTC brings cases based on the Consumer Welfare Standard, they do very well. When they bring cases that ignore and kick to the curb the Consumer Welfare Standard, they lose every time.
Yeah, that's interesting. You mentioned this earlier. Let me move on. NetChoice has conducted a few polls. I think you've got one out just recently, sort of gauging Americans' reactions to the lawsuit and how they feel about Amazon in general. What do the surveys show? What are Americans telling the FTC? What are they saying?
Yeah, thanks, Steve, for that question. Sure. NetChoice employed Echelon Insights to do some polling on Americans. Yeah. Well over a couple of thousand American consumers. And no surprise, by significant majorities, Americans love Amazon.
Yeah.
They trust the company and as an institution. And we've seen this in the polling data and others. In Morning Consult had done polls. Harvard and Harris, Axios and Harris had done polls that backed that up too. The Americans know that Amazon has had a positive impact on the small businesses that sell on the marketplace. And I think that's important too. 78% of the respondents knew that and appreciated that Amazon had been good for small business. And it was 79% among suburban voters, and it went all the way to 83% for conservatives.
Wow.
Right? So the poll also revealed that Americans, by a wide margin, oppose the core premise of the FTC's lawsuit, given the outcomes that the FTC is seeking. The notion of Amazon might be forced to allow a business to use slower and less reliable delivery services, and that's going to cause logistical nightmares, because Amazon's second-day delivery under Prime would be attacked through this lawsuit. Mm. The lawsuit claims that Amazon Prime is only available to sellers that make their goods available in Amazon's warehouse and fulfillment structure,
right,
unless they can build on their own something that matches the efficiency and quality and reliability. But the FTC suit would say that it's somehow discriminatory, that Prime's only available if a seller decides to put their goods in an Amazon warehouse and fulfillment center.
Yeah, that's interesting. You have opined that if the FTC gets its way, consumers will pay the ultimate price here. How so?
Yeah, so if you ask your average American about what they value most on Amazon,
yeah,
it's the beauty of that Prime guarantee of delivery,
yep,
on the second day. That would be gone under the FTC's lawsuit, because Amazon could no longer guarantee delivery if it couldn't require the sellers under Prime to move their things to an Amazon fulfillment center. A second is the idea of prices and choice. Americans today can look at items on Amazon Marketplace that include third-party sellers, Amazon sellers themselves, and generic brands that, yeah, Amazon offers. Those are the choices that are available to us when we start a product search on Amazon today. Those would not be available under Lina Khan's, wow, FTC lawsuit. They would force Amazon to stop competing with its own sellers,
yep,
by offering you and I additional choices, would force Amazon to stop offering generics as an alternative to what a third-party seller might be offering. Now, this is unthinkable if we were to walk into a Walmart or Target and suddenly there's no more generics, there's no more Kirkland brands,
yeah,
on the shelves, or that there's no more offers of Walmart's own brand products against those of third-party brands. We want to see all of those choices available to us, and Amazon's done a superb job making them available. And for the sellers who enroll in Prime, Amazon can make it available to you and I in a day or two.
Let me ask you this. With everything you just said, and you obviously are making your case against the FTC and the commissioner, but so what grounds are they making these? What grounds are they bringing this suit?
Yeah, the easiest way to understand that is to read Lina Khan's paper from, yeah, law school,
okay,
where she believes that, yeah, a company like Amazon, who successfully creates a marketplace like this, drives prices to be too low, making it hard for others to compete, or that Amazon then competes with its own sellers in a marketplace. Her vision is to break up Amazon so that each piece of the business is different.
Yeah.
Don't let them handle delivery. Don't let Amazon compete against third-party sellers. This is a vision that she may have for how she might design a business. And I welcome Lina Khan to start a business and run it the way she wants to run it.
Yeah.
But she cannot find in the current antitrust law, she can't find in the current consumer protection law, any hook,
yeah,
to realize the vision that she has to remake one of the world's most successful companies.
Yeah.
She's trying, but this is a case that is way out in front of what the law actually requires, especially under a consumer welfare standard. Lina Khan is a very smart lawyer. She's well aware that she's out over her skis on this case. And part of it is pressuring Congress to perhaps change the laws, or pressure some court to change from a consumer welfare standard to something that would allow progressives to design the kind of businesses they wish we had.
Yeah. A couple more questions I just want to end here. You talked about the consumer harm, and we and there's also another piece of this. And there's been a lot of opinion pieces out in the public domain from the third-party sellers themselves who CEO of a third reseller said, we are the people with the most to lose. If the FTC successfully breaks up Amazon, the corporate executives will be fine. So I got to assume at some level, if I'm a company and I want to sell my product on Amazon, I go into it knowing what the rules of the road are, right? This is the game that has to be played, and they wouldn't do it if they didn't think there was a benefit to their business.
No, I think that's exactly right. If you've got an item that you're selling to a marketplace that visits your store, it is such a win for you to move on to an Amazon marketplace so that you could reach instantaneously a global market for your goods. And if your goods are particularly attractive and unique, there are people all over the country, all over the world that will want to buy it.
Yeah.
And if your own fulfillment center, your own shipping department can't handle the volume, you simply enroll in Amazon's fulfillment program called Fulfilled by Amazon. At that point, they will handle the orders and the shipping and the returns so that you can scale up very quickly to reach a broad audience. It's true that you will have to have your item priced in a way that it competes with other sellers.
Yeah.
You'll have to price your item so that it's no more expensive on Amazon than it would be if I went into a store or another online site.
Yeah.
Amazon wants to be able to honor you and I, our customers. It wants to be able to honor us with a promise that they're giving us the best prices.
Wow, that's interesting. I know you don't have a crystal ball, but it's very clear that the FTC doesn't have a really good track record when it comes to these kinds of cases. I think they've lost to Microsoft. They lost to Meta Platforms. I know this is going to be a protracted fight. Do you feel good about it?
I feel like the courts move slowly.
Yeah.
But the courts usually get it right.
Yeah.
We have some superb judges. I've been attending some of the U.S. Justice Department case against Google over their search business down at the courthouse here in Washington, D.C. And the questions asked by the judges indicate an appreciation of how dynamic the technology industry is and how vigorously the companies compete with each other. And only after the fact, those companies want to point to the past and suggest that they were somehow excluded or disadvantaged at some point. The judge seems very quick to know that Microsoft, who's behind this case, had made a lot of errors when they rolled out their Windows mobile phones or bought Nokia to do phones. So if Windows and Bing are not a factor on the search that you and I do on our phones and desktops,
right,
this judge seems to appreciate the fact that it probably has more to do with Google doing a better job than Microsoft somehow being excluded. Because after all, Microsoft basically owned the desktop.
Yeah.
And had the opportunity, had Bing been a decent search engine, that it would never have been overtaken so easily by Google.
Yeah.
Right. So in this case, I'm giving you a rather long example of the kind of questions that the courts, the judges ask, that indicate we are likely to get a somewhat protracted trial in the FTC versus Amazon. But courts in the end, I think we'll get it right.
Gotcha. Sounds good. I have one last kind of major question to ask you. I just find it fascinating, this topic here. There's obviously debate going on in this country about the effects of social media on children, teenagers, their mental health. Number of states have trying to kind of get their arms around this. Governor Huckabee in Arkansas, she signed a law requiring minors to get parental consent before creating social media accounts. My understanding is the bill requires social media companies to contract with third-party vendors, perform age verification checks on new users. NetChoice has filed federal lawsuits over this measure. I think you're also trying to block similar type measures, California, and I believe New York, I think, as well. When I read the story and the headlines, it sounds like a no-brainer. But as we all know, the devil's in the details. Tell us what's going on here.
Yeah, as a parent and a technologist, I am always eager to make sure that parents have a handle on what their kids are doing online, whether it's social media or other sites they happen to visit. Mm-hmm. We have to have an awareness of what our kids are doing online. If we don't want our kids to be on the phone at 11 o'clock at night, take away the phone before they go to bed. Yep. Because parents, I believe, know best about the developmental proclivities and even the vulnerabilities of their children as they move through the teen years when they're particularly vulnerable. We have laws that govern what can be shown or shared with children under 13. But currently we're seeing a move towards changing that, mm-hmm. raising it all the way to the age of 18.
Gotcha.
The trick is that the laws in California and Arkansas run headlong into the Constitution of the United States government, namely the First Amendment. And again, it says Congress shall make no law impinging on the freedom of expression. And that applies to states, not just Congress.
Gotcha.
In both those cases, the states try to rather maybe well-intentioned but poorly designed laws that would force you and I, as men of a certain age, to have to provide two forms of ID just to go to YouTube.com. Or the neighborhood that I live in close to the studio here, where next door is a very popular tool for all of us neighbors to share news about the neighborhood, getting rid of junk that we'd like our neighbors to pick up, and events that we'd like to attend. Well, Nextdoor has, well under 0.5% of its population is under the age of 18. And yet, as the judge in Arkansas observed, Nextdoor would have to obtain two forms of ID for everyone who uses Nextdoor today. The judge quite correctly observed that could be the end of Nextdoor. Why would I use an application that required me to give ID when I can use it perfectly well today without an account and ID of my own?
Yeah.
So the notion of a law, a brute force law, that might well work for a parent who's been unable to appropriately manage what their kids are doing online, that if that law violates the First Amendment, they won't even get past the starting gate.
Got it.
And our lawsuits, I believe, were very well designed to focus on the First Amendment and a couple of other constitutional provisions and enable the states to redesign the approach they're taking. And I'm sure that they will come up with laws that don't run afoul of the First Amendment. But meanwhile, while the states are working that, states should follow the lead of, for instance, Florida, which requires that schools in Florida teach to children and to educators the best ways to manage their participation in social media, the best ways for them to understand when they see disinformation and how to handle it. I think that education, coupled with the ability of parents understanding that they have tools to limit the hours of the day their kids are on their phone, they have the ability to limit which websites their children use. And so parents have to pay attention and they have to be given the tools and the education to be able to parent the children. And I have a feeling that a parent is going to be in a much better position than the government of California when it comes to dictating how their child participates online and learns how to participate in the online world. It's not as if we can sequester these children until they're 18 years old without any ability of discerning what to share online, what not to share, what to believe and not believe. And suddenly when they turn 18, we throw them to the wolves of the online world. I think growing up includes learning how to grow up with an online world beside you.
Yeah. So we talked about a number of heavy hitting topics, AI and antitrust and parental guidance. And as you zoom out a bit, think about the members. Obviously, your members have different issues that they advocate for, that you advocate for on their behalf. Is there anything that particularly keeps you up at night? Anything worries you that maybe isn't being talked about in the media right now as you think about the future of technology and you know where the regulatory environment and maybe opportunities are headed?
Steve, I worry that America has lost the competitive edge that enabled us to lead the world, particularly through the evolution of tech companies and business models that we gave birth to, from Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Google, Twitter, eBay. All of these companies were born or raised on American free enterprise. Mm-hmm. And our system that allows a company to innovate and compete and take on a giant in an adjacent incumbent industry. And our companies have been able to take their innovations around the world, to the extent where the Chinese government simply rules by dictate what its citizens can see and say. Europe takes a different approach of individual rights, but the U.S. approach has always been, let the markets determine what consumers like and don't like, and encourage companies to innovate, invest, and compete vigorously.
Yeah.
That has served us well for well over 200 years, in particular through the tech industry, which is the way in which our economy has thrived and driven productivity up over the past three decades. So I worry every day that we have lost our way, become complacent, that tech's always going to be there for us, and somehow believed that regulating was going to give us more prosperity, that regulating was going to allow us to compete with the Europeans and Chinese, when in fact they are doing everything they can to outcompete and out-innovate American companies.
When you think about countries like China and others that sit here and look at our regulatory swimming pool and everything that's going on, are there national security implications to what they're trying to do, what our government is trying to do to American innovation?
I don't think there's any question.
Yeah.
That cold wars and hot wars will count heavily on technology to make the difference.
Yeah.
We're seeing it in Gaza and Israel. We're seeing it in the Ukraine. Technology, not just weapons systems, but intelligence, observation, and communications technologies, artificial intelligence, machine learning, all of these will play a huge role. And we cannot take for granted that America will lead the way at these homegrown technologies if we try to regulate them out of existence.
Yeah.
The approach taken in Europe, well, frankly, hasn't worked all that well. I challenge you to name a tech company of global significance that was born in the European system. The Chinese, you can name a lot of companies, and China has a massive market and it regulates in a top-down way. So China has shown that they can grow their economy and grow some technology companies. And not all of their tech in China was stolen from American companies. Some of it is homegrown there as well. China is a formidable rival and is exceeding us right now at the kind of growth that they can generate. And their model should not be the model that other nations around the world embrace. We need to remind them the American model of market-driven, consumer choice, innovation, competition, and investment, and that that will be the path to follow. I'm afraid that China is selling a very different attraction to other nations in terms of following them with top-down regulation.
That's interesting. Steve Del Bianco, President CEO of NetChoice. Thanks for joining Coffee with Closers.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
It's good to be with you.
A, B, C. A, always B, B, C, closing. Always be closing. Always be closing.
We're the Pinkston team, and this has been Coffee with Closers.
Be sure to subscribe for more episodes and follow us on Twitter, TikTok, and LinkedIn.
Catch us next time. We know you're not busy.